Welcome to Uncommon Purpose with your hosts, Mandy Cooley
and Stephanie Porter.
We believe our uncommon purpose is found at the intersection of our heads and our hearts.
In each episode, we'll share stories, resources, and expertise that will help us build meaningful connections and reflect the love of Christ.
Join us as we have an authentic conversation about the journey of living for the Lord while cultivating our uncommon purpose.
Hey, sis.
Hey, how are you?
I am doing great. How are you? What's on your docket today?
I am good. I have the gift of both of my kids. I was going to say two of my kids in my house, but that would make it sound like I might have more than two kids in real life. Both of my kids are home.
It is such a treat. Yay for spring break from college. I know. And I was thinking about that. Mine came home last night. Yours came home last night. Yeah.
He did. Yes, yeah. He did.
So my daughter came home last night and I was like, oh, my chicks are all under the same roof.
Yep. Well, mine are in the same roof because, you know, I've got this weird little, it's not weird. It's actually a joyful thing. Weird suggests bad. I mean it as non-traditional. Uh-huh. We have a non-traditional setup here at the Cooley compound. While we still continue to look for a better phrase than that, because that seems to carry some sort of like cultish vibe. We have my sister-in-law lives and we live and we have this beautiful barn on a single plot of land. Totally. Which is very closely connected to our community, but far enough away that we have the gift of some space and clearer skies at night and trees and anywho. So mine came home last night and he's on the property. So I guess that's the equivalent of on the roof because he's actually staying at my sister-in-law's house as she is traveling. Right now, and he's taking care of her animals. So, but when we got to go play last night for a little bit, our family went, we went to a bowling alley. It's been raining here for like a day and a half straight. And I don't know if it's going to stop anytime soon. I believe the Lord said he would never flood the world again, but it feels like we might need to start building a boat. I don't know. So we went to play inside last night. My husband was off. He normally works nights and he was off and the oldest was home and the youngest was here. So we went bowling.
Aww.
And we have not gone bowling as a family. Gosh, I don't know if I can remember.
Right. Last time.
And it was so sweet because when we were done, the boys were both, well, the young men were both like, can we go play in the arcade? And so I went and got them little arcade cards. And then my big old husband was like, can I go play in the arcade? He's just so much a kid still too. So they played arcade games. And my oldest loves the claw machine.
Uh-huh.
So he went and won these two obnoxious, you know, big plastic balls that say like, I don't know, one says llama corn and the other says piggy corn. I don't know. They're just goofy, you know, the ones that have all the little bumpies on the outside. And he's walking around with one under each arm. And then he's like, Mom, I'm going to win you something. And so he goes to the claw and gets me some little random stuffed animal that doesn't look like any real creature. It was just funny. Like he's 19 years old and he's just still such a kid. And there's so much joy in my heart when we walked out last night, all four of us, we had full bellies. My heart was full. We had laughed. We had played. It was so good. It was so, so good.
You know, that actually was not purposed, but that is a great intro into our topic today because we are going to talk about withness.
Oh, yeah. And we were with each other.
You were. Yeah. You were so, that is so fun. And so, but before we jump right into our topic, okay, first of all, I have to say I have been to the Cooley compound and the barn, y'all, is picturesque. I mean, it is so beautiful. It is so fun. Mm-hmm. One thing I love about Mandy and her family is like they use it to give it away. It's not just for themselves. So when we had our going away party, she was like, please let me host it for you. Yes. So we have been on property and have enjoyed this compound. And I think like, I know what you mean. You're like, ah, that word has got such a negative stigma, but really the truth of it is it's community. Like they are living in that just honestly Old Testament, Jewish cultural, Mideastern lens, community of, and that communal familial, environment where you're not underneath the same roof or on top of each other, but you are with your family. Mm-hmm. And so I have a Persian dad, who's from Iran and came over to the United States when he was 17. And he has taught me so much about this idea, this communal living, the way that they love and care for each other, the withness is so beautiful. And it was present long time ago. It's not a new concept. So
I, you know, I've never thought about it as you just described it. I have thought often about our space as being our family. My husband and I both lost our moms the same year, about 11 years ago. And, we both come from families that, split when we were young. And so our biological fathers live far away. His in Texas and mine in California. And, I have no siblings and he has one sister. And so, she desired to be closer to our family because of the two littles, which aren't at all little, but my two boys, our two boys. And, so she made a decision to come and move, her life. She works from home and travels frequently, and really loves that. Like she loves the freedom to be able to travel and also, the flexibility to go and do work things and leisure things. But she just wanted us closer when she was stationary. Mm. And simultaneously, while all of that has played out and she's built this beautiful home and we're all kind of sharing the same plot of land. I have long desired for deeper family connection as an only child. I just don't have family. I have bio family, you know, I have a cousin who lives in Arizona and another cousin who lives in Colorado. And, you know, again, my dad's in California, but I had not put together, until you just said it, this community of family that is that old. I mean, I grew up catty corner from my grandparents where we just did Sunday meals and, you know, family close. And I've always desired more of that. And so thank you for your view of our family, because that allowed me to see it a little bit of a different way. And a little bit of a fulfillment of a dream and a prayer that I've had for a long time. Yeah. I've felt her here, obviously she's, you know, we've shared the same space for a long time, but, it's just the way you described it reminded me, this is something I've prayed for a long time.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful that I get to, live that out. For all of its bumps and quirks, it is a sweet little gift that we get to share this space.
Yeah. It is absolutely a sweet little gift. And I think like, you know, in America, we've learned to live far from family. I mean, I live far from family. I just recently moved back to where I grew up. And now I'm like, I'd been away from my family for 24 years. Yeah. And my dad now is like 15 minutes. My mom passed away as well, 19 years ago, almost 19 years ago. But it has been so sweet to be reminded of them just being so close. But in this American life, it's like, it's no brainer for us to be 1,000 miles away.
Yeah.
You know, and I think about it too. My kids are both going off to college. They're going off states away. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I am like praying that they don't model my example of, oh, it's okay to live far away from mom and dad.
Yeah.
I don't want them to live far away from mom and dad. That witness feels tricky at that point.
Yeah.
We definitely can have witness other ways.
But that is a tricky season as moms of older teens. I do think we walk a really fine little line of praying for God's purpose to take life in our kids. And that might mean, you know, like your oldest chose to go to a school that is going to give her some financial freedoms because she received some great financial support to go there.
Absolutely.
And gives her a beautiful Christian education.
Yes. And she is right where she is supposed to be.
Yeah.
How could I rob her? How could I rob her of any of that?
Yeah.
If I'm like, but I want you next door.
Exactly right. That's the fine line. That's that like, I mean, gosh, to say fine, I feel like makes it even bigger than it is. Like it's this so tricky little space of walking out what it is like to want our kids best and at the same time want them near.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right before my oldest went to college. I'm sorry. My oldest started his senior year of high school about a month after you moved to Texas.
Oh,
and I think you know the story, but in case you don't, but for the benefit of our listeners who may be walking a similar season, I straight put myself in counseling. I'm like, my very good friend who holds lots of safe and sacred space for me is physically moving herself away. Oh. My kid is entering in senior year, which is full of all kinds of things. But anticipation of a year of him moving away. Like we didn't know where he was going to end up. Fortunately, he chose a school that's 45 minutes from us. But we didn't know what that was going to be. And there were just a number of things that were apart and were separating. And I remember going to my counselor on my first day, bless her heart. She is so wonderful. She says, okay, you know, tell me what brought you in. And I'm like, well, nothing in my life is the way that I want it to be. She's like, well, that's kind of extreme, you know, as one would when someone comes in using all of these alls and nothings and everything's
absolute language.
Mm-hmm. And I say, well, this, and then this, and then this, and I'm listing them off. And she's like, oh, okay. I can see maybe why I feel that way to you. But what was really at the core of that was this like deep fear of being alone.
Yes.
Like separateness, apartness. And, you know, I continue to do some work with her around feelings of abandonment and
so good
separateness and isolation and, you know, fight through a lot of that on a regular basis. But, it was this idea that I knew that I needed to separate well, right? Developmentally, I had created some attachments that were good and I needed to create the separation that was also good.
Yeah.
But that was foreign to me. I didn't know how to do that with my kid. And quite honestly, I didn't want to do that with you. I just wanted you to be back here too. Like I didn't want you gone.
No, I didn't want to go either.
I know.
But you know, you're doing such, and we're going to do a whole episode, maybe even 5 episodes. I don't know. We'll see what the Lord does with that on grief. You are doing such a good showing. This is real life grief because we grieve all things. We don't just grieve death, but when our friends that hold sacred space move away, feels like death. When our kids are getting ready to go off to college and life is going to change, it's feels like death. And we grieve the change, even when we want the change. Right. And so what a beautiful testimony. And what I'm just want to go, whoop, whoop, way to go, Mandy Cooley. We're choosing therapy.
Yes. Yes, man. That's kind of my response to everybody. Thank you for celebrating that.
Yes. I want to celebrate you. Yeah.
I tell everyone, I think just the way that we need dentists and doctors and, you know, other people who care for other parts of us. Everybody needs a good counselor.
100%. I love that. I think maybe we should even, I wrote that down. Actually, we should do a whole season, an episode on therapy.
Okay.
Why we should do therapy. How do you do how do you choose a therapist? You know, all that, because people don't choose therapy because it's daunting and they're like, and they don't choose it because they actually don't want to face the feelings that they're going through and deal with all of the stuff. And so I think that'd be really great. So we'll put that on the bookshelf.
Put it on the, put it in the parking lot.
And as we keep going in this topic today of withness, I want to say this, like your example here of talking even about your therapist is another example of withness, someone sitting in your space. So why don't you tell me as we go and we dive in here, tell me when I say withness, what does that stir in you? What do you think? Mm-hmm. What is your, you know, not to be technical, but like, what's your definition?
Yeah.
How would you describe it?
Yeah. So I'm kind of nerdy enough that I think a definition is a good thing, right? I think it's good for us to, partly because is a little bit of a tangent. I also think that we use language, you use language, I use language. And if we don't have kind of a shared understanding that our words mean the same thing,
right,
then that just lends itself to really messy communication. So
it does. And
I do generally feel like it's worth, right.
Y'all cannot see her face. You did not see the body language, but could I just tell you that like that word totally nailed her. Like I'd love for us to unpack that maybe, but I mean, like she just like melted when I said expectations, because when we don't have common language,
correct,
we have all kinds of unspoken and misguided expectations of one another.
Expectations. Yeah, for sure. For sure. So yeah, if you're looking for tangible takeaways, I think always it's worth the work to come to a shared communal definition of things in your most important relationships.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So withness, which for those who are listening and aren't familiar with that word, it's really the combination of the word with, as in together, and then just the condition of being with someone. Mm-hmm. And it sounds very close to witness, which we use as a word that suggests watching something, observing something, seeing something take place. And so because they're really close to one another, I think recently I feel like I'm hearing a lot of people, a lot of speakers, authors, podcasters use that language to kind of play off of the similarities. But when I think about a witness, someone who's observed something, it feels to me like a really passive engagement. It feels like a disengaged observation of something. So I can witness a car accident.
Yeah.
I can witness a, you know, a TV show. I can witness an interaction between people, but I'm not involved in it.
Yeah.
And so witnessing something just means kind of for me, connotatively, it just suggests that I'm observing, but not engaging.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where withness is something that really is almost the opposite of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's the process of being, I'm still seeing things, but it's a seeing with my heart and a choice to engage, to be present in the middle of the thing. It's a togetherness, but with some relational stakes.
Which when you were talking, I was like, okay, I think the, maybe the difference or the main thing that separates them withness is based in your emotion, like you're engaging emotionally, you're tapping into their emotions, your emotions. You're not just observing, you're empathetic, you're feeling that togetherness.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think sometimes I can feel emotional about something I'm watching.
Sure.
So, you know, I think about like the example of a car accident, for example. If somebody, if I drove past or if I observed a car accident, I would probably have some really big feels about that.
Right, right.
I would probably be sad. I would probably be concerned. Yeah, I would probably be curious or judgmental, or I kind of bleed empathy sometimes. I'd say it might be one of my tragic flaws. I might want to be helpful, right? Yeah. There might be a pull in me to want to get involved, right, and help to support that. But there's no relationship there.
Right. I like that differentiation.
And so if I'm using that same situation, the withness would be if I were to observe you in a car accident, mm-hmm, I would come into that, mm-hmm, alongside you.
Mm-hmm.
I would want to, and even if it was like not in the moment, maybe I didn't observe it, but you are experiencing the effects of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I would come sit kind of shoulder to shoulder, so to speak,
mm-hmm,
with you,
mm-hmm,
and let your experience of what you walked through be more important than the thing that I saw.
Right. And I was just thinking as you were talking, I was like, I have one of the greatest memories and of witness. When my oldest daughter was born, she was born 6 weeks early and went in the NICU. And I had a very traumatic delivery. I almost died. She almost died. Mm-hmm. And then had an emergency C-section, got, you know, the events were big. And so I didn't even get to see my baby until 12 hours after she was born. And yeah, it was, thank you. And, so then, when I was in the NICU for the week, my husband was at work and I was during the day. So my girlfriend would come and she would just sit with me. She didn't say anything. And we really couldn't hold, my little girl. I couldn't really hold her. She had to be in the, you know, incubator. She had to be on the bilirubin lights. And so there wasn't a lot of that ability, but just being present, and that relationship was so rich. I have never forgotten her ability to just set aside everything. And while, yes, she was observing life for me, she was absolutely in the middle of my pain, my fear, my uncertainty, and she was my comfort. It was just a beautiful comfort. And so I don't know if you have, do you have a memory or an example?
Well, as you're talking, what I'm thinking about as you're sharing that story, I'm curious for you what it was like, if you can think back to that, what did that feel like to you to have someone truly, play again on the words a little bit, like bearing witness to your difficulty? What was that like for you? I heard you say comfort.
Oh man. You know what? The real, you know, circling back even all the way to the beginning, when you were talking about your going to counseling, I wasn't alone. Right. The ability to be seen and known and have no words. I mean, that is a bond.
Yeah.
I mean, we didn't even talk, a lot of shoulder to shoulder. I couldn't talk. I was in deep grief for a lot of things. My mom was, you know, 3,000 miles away. I lived in Seattle. My mom was in Texas, and my mom was dying. And so there was like so many emotions inside of me. And I just knew when Sarah was present, I wasn't alone. So I just felt safe, honestly.
I love so much that Sarah, I love that you gave her name. I mean, that you
named
her.
She's special. Yeah.
I love that. I know you and I both believe that Jesus with skin on looks like you and looks like me and looks like Sarah.
Yeah.
And that the gift of Sarah in that room with you was the gift of Jesus in that space with you.
100%.
And I think that's the beauty of withness, right? Because that's what we see Jesus model all the way through the Gospels, where we get to watch him in relationship with his disciples.
Yeah.
Is the way Jesus did ministry was with people.
Yes.
So, you know, as he's walking down the street on his way to a job, I mean, yeah. I hate to call anything Jesus did a job, but you know, he's on his way to bring life to a sick girl, and he feels someone and stops to be with her.
Yes.
That he's in the boat with his disciples and he is with them in the middle of a storm.
Yes.
You know, he brings a word, he brings teaching, he brings correction and rebuke, but he brings, I mean, that's the very presence of Jesus is he chose to be with us.
Mm-hmm. God with us.
Mm-hmm. God with us. Yeah. And so this side of the resurrection, this side of the ascension, we have the Holy Spirit. And as believers, we carry the Holy Spirit with us into every relationship, every single encounter. We get Jesus with us when we're in community and with other people. And I love that you experience, because the way you described how you felt, comforted, seen, known, safe, like it makes me teary to think about, but I just feel like that's what Jesus would want for you.
Yeah.
Like the heart of our Lord is that you would be seen and known and loved and safe.
Yes.
And since he can't wrap his arms around you, he'll send Sarah to wrap her arms around you.
Right.
And what a gift that is.
Yeah, it was. It was really special. And it really, she really was Jesus with skin on. Mm. Okay. So can we just talk about the Chosen for a second?
You know that I could bring the Chosen into every conversation ever about Jesus. Gosh, I love that show so much.
So much. Okay.
So pause for 1 second. So if you are listening to this and you are not familiar with the Chosen, pause and head to thechosen.tv. And you will find, using their language, it's a multi-season TV show about the life of Jesus and his followers.
So without saying too much, because really, honestly, it builds and it's really beautiful from season 1, episode 1, and you can pick up wherever, but it just really does build and it's really beautiful. So without saying this season, this episode, I just want to say, there is a season where they're really showing the grief that people are going through, the grief that the believers that Jesus is going through. One of the disciples was grieving very hard from a loss. Peter was talking to Jesus and he was like, I just don't know what to say. I just don't,
this is a masterclass. This is, so I will say this, it's season 4. So if you start watching, you can skip ahead, but you'll miss a lot if you do. But season 4 treats grief in the most beautiful way I've ever seen. Oh,
so good. Right.
And it truly is instruction. Get a notepad and write it out.
It's so good. Honestly, I know. I watched it in the movie theater and I cannot wait until it is on so I can go back and take notes, because season 4 was fire. Okay.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
So, but this is it. This is the question with withness. So Peter is saying to Jesus, he's like, but I don't know what to tell him. And Jesus says, why do you have to tell him anything? Why don't you just sit with him? Mm-hmm. And Peter's looking at him like, what? He said, you know,
that's crazy.
you have your own experience. Mm-hmm. You've had your own grief. You know what he's feeling. Yeah. Oh my word.
Yeah.
And that
is the thing that gets in the way of withness.
Yes.
Is that in our humanity.
Yes.
Like just in my everyday, I don't like my people to hurt. and I want to fix it.
Yes.
I remember I was going through a study at our church that has just changed my life and so many others. We call it Growth Seekers. It's a ministry Stephanie and I've both been involved in, but yeah, it's a space amazing. Where we really teach emotionally healthy relationship skills. So how do we engage with one another as emotionally healthy people? Mm-hmm. And so I remember when God gave me this visual, I was going through Growth Seekers for the first time. That was probably 10 or 15 years ago. And he gave me this picture in my head of running around behind the people I love with a pillow. And I was constantly trying to get the pillow underneath them before they would fall and hit the ground.
Oh, you're and so kind.
Isn't that so kind?
That's so kind.
I mean, it really is. There's a goodness in that. I love my people so much. I don't want them to get hurt, but holy boundary crossing. I mean, I just could not have stuck my nose into more things that were not mine to solve, yes. fix, or redeem than I was.
Yeah.
And so when I started to look through that lens and start to see all these places where I'm trying to rescue someone as if they are mine to save.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. It just totally changed my view of how I engage in relationships. But in those places, you're describing a scene in The Chosen where Peter is looking at his friend and he doesn't yeah. want his friend to hurt. Yes. He wants to bring words or presence or something to him to help his friend not hurt.
Yeah.
And Jesus tells him, just be with him.
Oh, just be with him. I started sobbing because that's really—
What was that about? Tell me in you, what was that sobbing about? Where did you go?
I have some really great friends that know how to be with me. You are one of those friends. Mm-hmm. And then I have other people in my life, one that they don't know how to be with yeah. you, me yeah. or you maybe, yeah. but right. Like they don't. And that doesn't make them bad. I'm not saying that makes them bad. Yeah. I'm saying, but just that love. And then the second thing is like, that is when I know and feel God in the most divine mm-hmm. ways. Mm-hmm. When mm-hmm. he sends his people. And sometimes I've had non-believers he has sent that they have been with me through something. If I'm willing to receive, because mm-hmm. there's a part of withness that mm-hmm. you take part in. Like you might not be the giver of giving it. You might be the mm-hmm. receiver, but if you don't want to receive what someone's giving you, then you miss out on the withness too.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, that's but good. What happened really inside of is just like, yes, this is what love means.
Yes.
This is what love your neighbor, love yourself, love God. This is mm-hmm. the definition of love that God is talking about. Nothing, nothing more than withness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Before I had this phrase withness, I would use the language, the ministry of presence.
Yeah. Right.
That sometimes in ministry work, we think of busyness, like activity, like I've got to put on this program or schedule this Bible study or create this event or whatever. Like I'm looking for new creative. It's like, there's a busyness associated.
And a buzzing and a buzzness. Yes. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have found the most beautiful ministry is simply being present.
Oh, so beautiful.
And I can remember, so to your question earlier, you know, I can remember not receiving, but I can remember a moment of doing this for someone. And I did it initially out of a like, oh my gosh, there is deep hurt. I had a dear friend who lost a child in a very traumatic to her, it would be traumatic to any of us, but it was such an acute loss for her. And she lost her baby at 39 and a half weeks.
Oh my gosh.
That's terrible. It was terrible. And for all practical purposes, it was a healthy pregnancy.
Oh, that's
she had so no reason to expect anything. And she texted me to let me know that her baby was born into the arms of Jesus. And I, as I received that text, I just fell apart for her. Like,
sure.
I cannot fathom that loss. And I responded to her, "What do you need? What can I do?" And she said, she told me where they were at the hospital. And she said, "If you want to come." So I remember sitting, she and I recently just talked about this again. It was, it's just such a precious space for me. I thought to myself, like, "Ooh, do I really go? Like, what do I do? I don't know what to do. Right. I don't know. What do I say? What do I do? Do I take her something? She doesn't want flowers. Can't take her food." Like the practical ways that we learn to care for other people. And I'm like, okay, I guess I'll just go. And so I remember looking at my husband and I'm like telling him what happened and telling him I'm going. And I walked in the room and I like, again, it was so foreign to me. I had never walked this with someone and I didn't, I just really felt like a fish out of water. Like I had no idea what I was going to say. And I walked in and I gave her a hug and I just sat with her and, you know, without going into a lot of details, because, you know, in particular for those who are listening who may have lost a child, I just want to be super sensitive to the tenderness of that loss. But I just sat with her, was there for a while in the hospital with her for quite a while that day. And then as she moved into making arrangements for a service, and then I kind of kicked into a little more protective, like, "Don't mess with my girl. Like, don't say something stupid. Don't be, don't say a terrible thing in the middle of grief. You know, don't tell her this was God's plan. Don't tell her that the baby's in a better place. Don't, I mean, none of that. Don't speak nonsense." No. But that process taught me, like walking that season with her taught me more than I think anything ever had.
Absolutely.
The value of no words.
Yeah. The value.
The value of just sitting.
Say that again.
The value of no words. I mean, there wasn't, what word can we offer to someone who has lost?
Right.
Whether it's a dream, a person,
right.
You know, a marriage, a friendship, a whatever, what can we offer?
Yeah.
There's not a word.
There's not a word.
So it's just the ministry of being there.
Mm-hmm.
Because in those moments, like in your story, in this lost moment, when I think back to those times where people have shown up for me, I already felt pretty alone.
Yeah.
In my hurt. I don't need to be more alone. I just want to be with somebody who loves me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love that.
I'll be alone later. you know, there'll be time to be alone.
Yeah. So, okay, as we wrap up today and, you know, we think about like, what would you say is the most practical thing about withness? Like, as we give our practical steps, what would you tell our listeners?
Shut your mouth.
Yeah.
It sounds so sassy. I don't mean it sassy. But I think learning the skill, and it is a skill because I do believe it's something we all can learn, to sit comfortably in silence with another, to not crack jokes, to not apply scripture, to not try to tell your story, to well-intentioned, bless, so well-intentioned, we often try to share pieces of our story.
Yeah.
For the purpose of helping to normalize someone else's, just to learn to sit in the stillness and be okay with quiet.
And would you say that kind of takes, and you're probably thinking, well, I'm not there. I'm not comfortable with being still or quiet, but I think that takes a self-awareness in ourself. Like, I'm going to be uncomfortable and I need to be okay with my uncomfortableness.
Right.
Like when you were getting ready to go to the hospital, you were going through all of your you were trying to find the thing that was going to make you feel better.
Right.
About going. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you've just leaned into, well, dang, none of those things are really going to work. So I guess
in that moment, I do remember thinking to myself, she is more important than my discomfort.
Oh, hey, what? Okay. Say that again.
the person on the other side, for me, I'm a relational person. Like I just feel like when I, the healthier I get, the easier it is for me to put someone else's needs above my own discomfort. Mm-hmm. And in that moment, she was like, her grief was so big. Her loss mm-hmm. was so significant. There was no amount of discomfort that I could weigh more heavily yeah. than what she was walking through. Yeah. So I could go and be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Because I loved her enough to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. I think that loving, the most loving thing we can do is learn the skill of withness. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so that means, like you said, it's a skill. So that means it's practice, it's success, yeah. it's failure, it's showing up, it's recognizing when I didn't show up. It's like, okay, then we're going to get another opportunity.
Yeah.
Right. So just being able to show up, it's learning to, I think we actually even have to practice with being still with Jesus to learn how to be practice, how to be still with people.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Because this is the way we grow in our relationship with Him.
Right.
So that we can be rooted and grounded.
Right.
Right. I mean, Jesus tells us that, like, abide in me.
Yes.
And then the fruitfulness will come.
Right.
So we do have to learn to get comfortable. That's the gift that God gives us
yeah.
is being with us. We just have to make space right. for it and invite him in. Right. But yeah. So what does it look like? What does that skill look like for you? So withness as a skill, what do I need to know how to do?
Oh, that's such a good question. Well, I think what I need to know first is what I feel. Mm. You know, I need to take an inventory of what's going on in me. And then what I need to know is, man, this isn't about me. Mm-hmm. And so I need to die to self and to love someone else more than I love myself. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that for me, those two things, they stand out the most, but yeah. then cultivating curiosity about the other person, even yeah. sometimes it's not in questions. It's not, it can be an observation, right? Witness could turn to withness. It is like being curious in someone's presence. Like, you know, when they are hurting, we all have been with a friend that just needed us to show up and sit with them and hold their hand, whatever they're yeah. going through. Mm-hmm. Or let's go back to the beginning. Even when we were talking about your bowling night, you guys, yeah. that was a fun moment of witness.
Yes. Yeah.
That was, we were present, we were engaged, we were enjoying each other. And so we've got to have those moments too, because those are bonding moments.
And those same skills apply, right?
Yes.
My ability to show up and let there be silence in the room or in the circle, you know, with my family is the same skill in a good time as it is a yes. bad time. Like I don't need to be the orchestrator of all the fun. I can right. just show up and let there be space for things to unfold.
The thing that just really hit me right there too, was in both scenarios, whether it's heavy or it's fun, we allow the other people to be themselves.
Mm, yeah.
And you said something so beautiful in the beginning. You're like, my husband is just a big kid. My mm-hmm. kid is still a kid. Well, and those weren't derogatory statements. Those were enduring acceptance yeah. of yeah. their, because a little kid goes with us forever, our 2-year-old or 5-year-old or 7-year-old, mm-hmm. mm-hmm. they're inside of us forever. Mm-hmm. And, the beauty is you accepted that they were embracing their inner child and you mm-hmm. weren't like, you're being immature. You were like, you guys, y'all have fun.
Yes.
And that allowed Lay. You to enjoy them.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's important in withness, is that we accept yeah. the yeah. people as themselves.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. yeah. Acceptance. That's good. And that's a skill. I think that's a skill that we cultivate.
Yeah.
Is the ability to kind of parse out acceptance and approval. in a way that allows me to accept someone, even if I don't approve of them. Mm-hmm. And approve sounds real judgy, but more like, do I agree?
Yeah.
Would I choose the same thing? I don't have to choose it. I can just accept it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So as we end today with our two questions, mm-hmm. what do you need, Mandy Cooley?
Oh, what do I need? The thing about withness is it is something, and you alluded to this, is it something I need to receive as much as it is something I need to give?
Good.
I think people who know me and love me know, would say, I think it's probably pretty safe to say that I am pretty comfortable giving withness.
Yes.
I am still working on receiving withness.
Yeah.
Part of what gets in my way is recognizing my own need to slow down.
Yeah.
To name my stuff.
That's good.
And to just continue to be reminded that I don't have to have it all figured out. Like, it's okay for someone to just come sit with me in the middle of my messy mess.
Yeah.
I'm mentally preparing before we were recording. I'm mentally preparing for a good friend is coming over with her suite. She has four kiddos and they're young, you know, like 9 and under, and they're precious. And I love those kids and they like to come to my house. They say they like to come and see us, but they really just want to come and play Mario Party on our Nintendo Switch. And so, and my big kids love playing with the little kids. And so it's fun. And then I get to sneak in a little time with my girl. And so I'm going through the mental headspace of my house is not clean. Uh-huh. Oh my goodness. My house is not clean. And I still want to be in a relationship with her enough that I'm not going to mop my floors and I'm not going to like dust my lamps before she comes, because we're just going to hang out. But that's mental gymnastics for me to not have my space, like to not be all pulled together before I allow someone into, in this case, it's like physically coming into my space. But, my work, I feel like my perpetual work is, allowing someone to come into and provide withness to me, even when I'm, especially when I'm super messy.
When you feel less than.
Yeah. Which is when I need it the most.
Yeah.
It's just when I feel worthy of it the least.
Yeah.
And I have to be okay with that.
Yeah.
So my need is to continue to practice, to be seen in a, when I am broken and messy. Literally messy house, not just a messy life.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, yeah, that's so good.
What
about good.
You? What do you need in relationship to withness?
I think the last thing that hit me was to just to remember to accept people for where they are and who they are.
Yeah.
You know, just let them be them. And in all their goodness, they're doing their best to show up and do their best life. Right. And, and that is a good reminder for me. You know, so I could go on and on about, you know, even my own daughter, you know, I was realizing like, I wasn't trying to squash her, but I was trying to, in my justification, mold her or help her or shepherd her. And then I realized, I'm not letting her be her. And, so that is not withness. So I had to go back to her just yesterday. I said, hey, I want you to know, I see that I'm doing this and, I'm sorry, I owe you an apology and I adore you and I love you. So I'm on it. I'm working on it. And that is,
that is so beautiful, friend.
Thank you. It's real.
Yes. That's its own kind of withness. I want to celebrate that in you. Yeah. Like it is, gosh, what a hard thing it is as a mom to go to our kids and apologize and to own our stuff. And what a gift you give her to let her not just see it modeled, but to experience, right? Like she's not just witnessing you doing it. She's in the withness of your humanity and your brokenness and your ownership and your responsibility. and she can internalize that and carry that with her in her pocket forever.
Thank you. Yeah. And so, okay. So where did you see God in our conversation today?
Sometimes I feel like this question is so, it's not hard to narrow, right? Like I see so much of God's design in the topic of withness. I think most simply, I think where I see God is just in my gratitude for his willingness to do this for us, to come and be with us.
Yeah.
And to model it. The more time I spend in the red letters of the Bible, the more that I find that he really, truly just was showing us with every encounter exactly how to show up for each other as we represent him to the world.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Absolutely. So I was thinking this along the lines, like the thing that really hit me, like, where did I see God, was when we said God with us. I was like, oh man, that touched my soul, right? Yeah. Like, yes, he did. Yes. And he came and he showed us. But well, just to say this a little bit further, to make it a little bit more, not ambiguous, but more specific, he loved being, I don't know that I shouldn't say he loved being, but I think what I'm noticing is every interruption was a chance for him to be with, and he didn't mind being interrupted. And so that's why I was going to say he loved being interrupted, but he embraced, I should say that maybe that would be better.
Yeah.
He embraced interruptions as an opportunity to model withness. Yeah.
Yeah.
So friend,
that's good.
Go and be with your people.
Yes. And here's the other encouragement is, if you don't know how, just show up, do it clunky, do it wrong, make apology. If you cause harm, but also just be willing to just show up.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's not a task in your home. There's not a responsibility at your job that is more important than the relationships that God has entrusted you to carry. Absolutely. So go love well, friends. Yeah. Go love well.
That's a good word. All right, y'all. We'll see you next time.
We've loved having this conversation with you, and we are excited for the next one. Make sure to subscribe to Uncommon Purpose wherever you listen to podcasts so you'll never miss an episode. Also, you can connect with us on social media. We would love to hear your thoughts, your stories, and your experiences. Your journey is a part of this larger tapestry we're weaving together. Until next time, friends.